first sharing. I just want to thank you for that visualization of the anxiety level being creatively transformed.
Good. I was actually feeling it, which is why it was so predominant in my mind.
It felt so freeing to me all of a sudden, because I think I'm finding whenever that anxiety is the need to control, whenever that anxiety begins to bubble up, I just want to press it back down, keep control, rationalize. It's just a beautiful visualization. Another thing that's come to my mind, listening to many of you, is I think a conundrum I'm feeling is this, I don't know if it's a paradox yet, but I'm trying to figure out, I've been working very hard over the past 6 years or so. I'm lucky enough to get to stay home with my children, and I think it's very sad that that's not the norm in our culture, and that it's a privilege by my economic class, and I guess my marital status. But at any rate, it's my children have given me many things, but one of them is the opportunity to really focus and maybe deepen spiritually. On what it means to live a good life, to live a right life, what it means to be in this world. And as I kind of work to, and it's my husband's ego, it's also big. As we've worked to create a life that we believe is good and will teach them to be thoughtful, generous spirits in this world. I've realized that we've also created this little lovely, comfortable bubble around us. And also at home with ease and an atmosphere like this, I'm really in Chapel Hill in general. And a couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go to my grandmother's and be with the rest of my family. My husband and children stayed at home. And even amongst them, I felt this enormous disconnect between the way I try and live my everyday life and the way they're choosing to live theirs. And it was really hard not to be judgmental. It was just this kind of awkward fit. And I realized, that we've been living in something like that. And so now I'm trying to figure out, how to make that fit less awkward and to engage, people who aren't like me or who haven't been thinking about this for, however many years.
I feel like I don't know a lot of you. I go to the church, and I guess to reach out farther, maybe, I guess just to understand that fire has been lit here in this congregation. And I feel like I like to come visit sometimes, I look forward within us to see how it goes for you. My Unity Church recently went through losing a minister and then getting another one, and so we just stopped working about planet, and I have to kind of start up again. And I guess it's hard work, I'm very touched by what you said, Sharon, about the depression that probably most of us live with some low level of it all the time. And it starts to come up, well, for me it is a big ball of anxiety, and I think that's where the energy is. I do not think that this culture, and I think the culture of empire that Courtney talks about, that culture does not honor feelings. Feelings are powerful, they're unthinkable sometimes. And we don't know how to communicate them in a way, for instance, anger. We don't know how to communicate it in a way that does not injure the other person, that simply says, this is how I feel. I'm feeling angry because Progress Energy, you continue to run a nuclear power plant that, for me, does not feel safe. I don't want to hurt anybody at Progress Energy. I'm not interested in making it into an us-them situation. I want you, Progress Energy, to come and sit and talk with those of us that are very afraid that due to the age of the plant, which is now going on 18 years, that it stands a higher chance each year of a serious accident. And so to be able to communicate using, you know, the phrase using I statements, that is serious. That's a serious way that really works. Because I don't want to blame somebody who has made a career at Progress Energy. They're feeding their children. Something good comes out of that too for their lives. But I want to communicate that I'm scared, and know what's on top of that a lot of times is anger. The anger is the reaction. You know, I'm mad that you're doing that, but what is it if I sit with it? I'm really scared for my life. And so there's a lot of power in feelings, and I just want to honor every single person's feelings in this world. But when they start to come up strongly about this issue, it is scary. But it's the power and the energy that gets you up every morning to work full time on this global warming issue that I've chosen to do for the past year, not making any money at it, has been the most energizing work I've ever done in my time here. And I'm not suggesting that other people, oh, I ought to do just what I'm doing. I'm just saying that's what's worked for me. And it's true, every month when the bills come up to be paid, it's pretty scary, but I'm learning a lot of stuff, and I don't know where it's going to go. But I do feel alive in honoring the terror, the grief, the anger. I just want to invite each one of you to do that too.
All of this is very interesting to me. I didn't see the film except for the last 10 minutes, and what it expressed to me is what I have been hearing since Rachel Carson came down the pike. It's been many, many years, and my knowledge is just as well steeped since then. What we take as a point. And I'm not sure that the use of highly structured, very emotional, and, you know, wonderfully intellectual attempts to educate people about the problems is ever very effective for any long period of time. I think in order to do this, it has to be combined with what I call deep-seated training. If you want people to behave, if you want them to act in a different way, you have to train them how. So combined with all of these insights and knowledges, knowledge and sophistication about what really is going on and how horrendous it is, where are the plans to train people how to be different? How do you take these feelings you've been talking about, of your energy, your fear, your depression, how do you take the strength of those feelings and turn them into some kind of a training ground for everyone around you, for your family, for your friends, for your community, for your schools? Where are the plans?
because I believe this is the only way we're going to be able to really change things around. I'm not denying the validity or the integrity of what everybody does at the moment and how they do it, whether it's a film, whether it's a speech. But when we leave it on the level they're at, we're not getting it down to the grassroots. So I'm throwing out a question. How do you want to go about training people? Because basically how you get people to change is tasks. Small ones, and they become a little bigger, and then it's a little bigger. This was an example that was thrown out here about the seatbelt. And how did you get everybody to put their seatbelt on? Well, with children, it's far more effective because you said to them, put your seatbelt on and you can't get in the car. Now it's a very effective situation because they've legislated it. If you don't put your seatbelt on, you can get it. Some states have very high fines. They go as much as $300 if you don't have a seatbelt. There are tons of insurance companies all over the country that will not pay you a dime if you get caught in an accident and you're hurt and you don't have your seatbelt. I'm not suggesting that legislation is the answer at all, but I am suggesting that it's the training of the children that had the impact on the seatbelts. So, for what it's worth, I think that whatever you do on this level of making movies and publishing books, you still have to combine it with how are you going to make people change. Information is never enough. It just doesn't work. All it does is get tossed in everything else that we are over inundated with. And I'd be very happy to work with anybody who'd like to training program. Of course, I did train for a while and did my education and graduate work in training. Got some incredible things out there to use training with. I don't know where you get the money to do it. These are all things that have to be considered. Whatever point I was in there.
I guess for me, the main barrier would be that feelings are messy and can't be put into nice buckets that I can use and I can get them. So it's a somewhat recovering control for the other.
Are we good?
Failing fairly often. I've heard that spending time on thoughts and feelings and sharing those with people. It's much easier for me to sit down and plan a program. I recognize that because I believe that we need to change our stories as a culture, programs aren't going to be enough. Got to have some rewarding feelings behind those stories that make people want to adopt those different stories. Otherwise, there's too many enticing reasons for people to keep going with the stories they have. They can block out all the stuff because of the rewarding stories. And it's how can I build a set of stories that are where I can articulate the reward associated with those stories in such a way that people choose to follow them versus another. So I recognize the need to go deeper in discussion with people who share my convictions. But it's tough for some people.
Well, I don't know that I have any barriers to having this kind of discussion with this group because I know at least pretty well, and so this is a group I feel comfortable with. I think the question is, how do I feel about talking about these things with some of the other groups that I'm part of? And I'm speaking now as a person who comes from a career in the corporate world. You know, 15 years ago, people I hung out with, if I would have mentioned half of these things, including the sort of flip-off line in the film that says, well, it's fairly easy to secondary capitalism. and, you know, that would have been about like saying in another life to one of the Unitarian Universalist Church, you know, if you were a fundamentalist church, and say, what do you mean, from a different life? You know, it's just heresy. And so I find still with a lot of people I know today from other communities that I'm part of, there are some really well-intentioned, you know, intelligent, knowledgeable people who, you know, even politically are on, you know, what I call the right wavelength. But one of them said, I have it's really maybe a bumper sticker, but I have it as a magnet on my refrigerator that says, capitalism is a predatory stage of human development. Mm. And we selectively have to take that down when we have certain I'm used to take it down. And somebody said to me recently, but you are a capitalist, right? And I said, well, not really. And that's always kind of a showstopper in some circles. And so I found that it's put a lot of pressure on me to feel as if, having been in corporate America, having a lot of education and, you know, management and everything beyond my undergraduate degree, to really make sure that I feel a great pressure to be educated, and so that when I say something like that, and they say, well, because this person said to me, well, you know, capitalism is what gave you this hospital. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean the system is right. You know, it doesn't make it right. And so I feel a lot of pressure to be able to make sure I'm up to snuff on supporting my views with people who sort of expect me to be in a different place. And that can be
back to the trust. What would it take to trust? I'm not a vocal person.
No.
People probably wouldn't believe how much I talk about it. I definitely am a person who is more an observer, perceiver. I think the thing that would, the hardest part of verbalizing things for me, I think is feeling that these perceptions, my observations might be new. But as I listen to all of you who are actually just thinking about feelings, then I can say, no, you're not ignoring what I'm thinking or what I'm feeling.